This is Omaha Sports Insider with Joe Quinn and Nick Handley on your radio at AM 590, online at AM590ESPNradio.com, and on your smart speaker. Ask Alexa to open AM 590 Omaha. Now, here's Joe and Nick.
All right, coming up 30 minutes from now, Cindy at Chi-Town. Nebraska gets set to take on Rutgers in round one of the Big Ten tournament, actually opening game of the Big Ten tournament. 4:30 pregame, 5:30 tip in that one. If Nebraska were to win today, Nick, you and I are going to have a very, very short day tomorrow. As what do we think? About probably, what, 1:30?
Between 1:30 and 2, because you got the first game starting at 11:30, and then Nebraska would play, I think it's 25 minutes following the conclusion of that first game.
So probably 2 o'clock, a couple hours for the game.
Yeah, not sure when the pregame coverage would start. I don't know. Maybe 12:30 or 1 is when network coverage would start. So if Nebraska does win tonight.
Always fun to speculate. Got to get through 1 before you can play 2, I suppose. So there is that. Yeah. But
we'll tweet out the start time if and when that becomes a reality for
Nebraska.
There you go.
Tomorrow. Good deal. Got what's on tap coming your way here before we are done with this hour. But we'll lead things off with this.
It's time for 5 good questions on AM 590 ESPN Omaha.
And it is brought to you, as always, by the Teammates Mentoring Program. Find out how you can join the team today, be a mentor, make a difference in a young person's life by visiting teammates.org.
All right, guys. So right now we have the conference tournaments going on. Kind of decide who goes to the NCAA tournament, which is next week. One of my favorite guys, Stanford Steve, we've had on the show before, he says that the conference tournaments, like this week, is better than the NCAA tournament a week. Do you guys agree with that hot take?
No, I don't, because now there are some very compelling moments, and we saw a lot of those in the mid and low major tournaments too, which is always kind of fun. I talked about this yesterday with just the overall reaction, because they understand they're one big league, so if they win it, then they're going. If they don't, they're not. They're not going anywhere. I still have always stood by that I feel Thursday and the Friday of the NCAA tournament are the two best days in sports, period, because it's all day. Everybody has an interest, because even if you're not a basketball fan, chances are you're filling out some kind of a bracket, so you always have a casual rooting interest, if nothing more than to be able to have bragging rights or even win some money. So I do appreciate the conference tournaments, because you do see some of those unexpected runs by certain teams. But when it comes down to it, I could never put it in front of the Thursday and Friday, the first and second round of the NCAA tournament.
I feel like there are two arguments to be made here. Guys who are professional bettors have a much better time. I know that's kind of Stanford Steve's, you know, angle on a lot of this stuff. Guys that bet these games have, I think, generally speaking, a better experience during conference tournaments, because there are different angles that you can look at, right, that make games interesting to handicap for a variety of reasons. And the guys that I talk to that are pro bettors usually do better on the conference tournaments than what they do during the NCAA tournament. So from a betting perspective, I could see that argument, okay? I feel like I like the games this week. I really do, because I like seeing the elation of these, you know, small conference teams that are, you know, kind of realizing their dreams. Because, I mean, look, like I was watching like Farley Dickinson last night play, what was it, St. Francis, I want to say, before the Summer League Championship. Like, Farley Dickinson, they're not going to win the NCAA tournament. For them, winning their conference tournament and just going to the dance is like the ultimate prize. That's like the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, and, you know, maybe winning a game once you get to the dance. But look, the problem with some of these conference tournaments, Nick, is I feel like there's too many garbage games like during the week. What makes the NCAA tournament so great next week is you get like Thursday, Friday, all day long, like potentially great, meaningful games where like upsets are a real possibility. Like this week, I mean, like, we suffered through Clemson, NC State in the ACC tournament earlier today. Well, you have too many junk games like
just
that.
Just about every conference.
They just clog it all up.
Every,
you know,
team is invited to your conference tournament, as opposed to the NCAA tournament, where you had to do something to get there, whether it was the body of work that you had throughout the year, or like what we've just experienced, a team that just won the conference tournament and got that automatic bid. Like, everybody has earned their way there, as opposed to teams that are really, really bad, but guess what? Their conference gets everybody into the conference tournament, so you have to play.
It's sort of like one of those deals where, in all honesty, most of these conference tournaments don't take off until, like, Friday, maybe even Saturday, where you cut off the fat, essentially. Or the teams that are, you know, kind of the Cinderellas in their conference tournaments are going to make those deep runs. I think that, for me, is kind of what sets the two apart and makes me lean towards the NCAA tournament being a better deal.
Two.
Sticking with the conference tournaments, who do you guys like to win the Big Ten and the Big East tournaments this weekend?
Well, Big East, you can, like John said, you can probably flip a coin. I'm going to lean towards Marquette. I think they've been the best team all year. I like the fact that they miss, you know, I guess they got Seton Hall in their half of the bracket, but I just don't know. Nick, I mean, I don't know. I feel like Marquette, Villanova were the two best teams, but as John said, they were 4-8 the last couple weeks. I don't think I have enough faith in Seton Hall. I mean, Marcus Howard's another one of those guys for Marquette that can go for, you know, 40 points in a night. So I'll go Marquette. I don't feel great about it. In the Big Ten, I'm going to go Michigan State. And I think the biggest reason is they are getting Nick Ward back for the Big Ten tournament, which I think will help them tremendously. But I would say smart money's on one of the two Michigan schools, but I'll lean towards Sparty and Tom Izzo hoisting it.
I am going to go with Villanova because I feel like they're at least playing a little bit better over the last week than what Marquette has. I mean, Marquette does go in on a four-game losing skid, so I'm not really all that excited about the way that they're currently playing right now. Wouldn't shock me if they won. Also wouldn't shock me if, as Johnny mentioned, Seton Hall, another team that's coming in on a high note, winning two games in a row. I will take Villanova to win that one, and I'm going to go a different route in the Big Ten because I do think that with Michigan State having Ward back, that is big for them. I cannot discount the job that Painter has done with Purdue, and I am going to take the Purdue Boilermakers to win this. I think they are starting to play some of their best basketball, really coming down the stretch, and they've really kind of found themselves in the second half of the season. So I'm going to take the Purdue Boilermakers to win the Big Ten.
Three.
Michigan and Seton Hall for me.
Yeah, no picks for Nebraska? No? None? No? Okay.
I don't even think they'll win tonight.
I'm very skeptical of that.
So we got Selection Sunday on Sunday, and thankfully it's going to be a bracket instead of coming out in alphabetical order like the disaster they did last year.
Yes, is it, by the way, real quickly, is it going to be that monstrosity, the game show revealing all the teams? Hey, you get a pizza. Hey, you get a pizza. Like that thing
I think it's supposed to be gone.
Okay, so good. No. That thing was terrible. Anyway, go
don't
on.
Don't outthink yourself on those kind of things, TV networks. Just unveil the teams. That's what people are waiting for.
But when it comes to that bracket finally being revealed and you can go and fill out your bracket, are you the type of guys who fill it out that night? Do you want to let it marinate for a day or two? Or are you the guy who's filling out the night before the tournament starts?
I wait not the night before, but I also don't do it the day of. I won't do it the night after revealing the bracket. So, yeah, I'm usually a Tuesday guy. Now, I know the Dayton one will impact people, you know, the play-in games, which I'm glad that's exactly what we're now calling them and not the first round. The Dayton games, I think, do impact some people. I really don't care if I'm factoring those in or not. Typically, I'll wait on Tuesday. I'll have it filled out by Tuesday night. That's where I'm usually at.
Yeah, Nick, I'm kind of with you. Usually it ends up being like a night before the tournament starts for me because I end up forgetting to do it. I'm like, oh, I'm going to get to that. And I just like, it's Wednesday night at like midnight. I'm like, I haven't done that yet. Better get on it. I feel like sometimes I'm kind of your classic overthinker with a lot of these things. In a lot of cases, like my first gut reaction on how I should fill the thing out is usually what ends up being the most accurate. But truth be told, I usually end up waiting, not necessarily because I want to let it marinate or because I'm, you know, digging deep and thinking through the matchups. It's more because I just, quite frankly, forget to do it until it's a little bit later on in the week.
Four.
All right, out of these two guys who moved teams, which one of their teams will have more success compared to individual success? So Antonio Brown with the Raiders or Le'Veon Bell with the New York Jets, which team will have more success going forward?
Which team?
Yeah.
Will?
Not concerned about their individual success, but which one of those two the teams they move to will have more success?
Now, how do you define going forward? Are we talking this season or are we talking like over the course of both deals? I think they both go about 3 or 4 years?
As long as they're there.
All right.
Okay, so the team that will look the best.
So Antonio Brown with the Raiders,
yeah.
Le'Veon Bell with the Jets.
I'm not over the moon about either coach. I don't think we know enough about Adam Gase. I don't think you saw everything there is to know about Adam Gase, the head coach in Miami. So I'm a little bit more on the fence about him. When it comes to Gruden, I hate the things that he did in the offseason last year to try to really put his stamp on this organization. But I do all of a sudden now see a lot of weapons. For assuming Derek Carr is their quarterback, we'll see what happens in the draft. And with all of the picks that they have, you know what? Based on what they have in the draft and Gruden's experience, too, I think the two types of players will be equally as important. I'm going to say the Raiders. And knowing that they're moving to Vegas, I think that kind of creates maybe even a little bit more opportunity free agency going forward. So, yeah, I'll take the Raiders.
I think it's good logic, and I would probably lean that way as well. I mean, they have the opportunity to largely reshape the way that this franchise looks over the next couple seasons with all the picks that they have. Because, Nick, I don't know that they're going to be great this year. So for the large draft haul that they have this season, the year before they moved to Vegas, I think that they could have a fairly high pick in that first round as well. So the Jets, I don't know. I think the book is still out on what kind of a player Sam Darnold is really going to be. I mean, I feel like as football fans, we, you know, look at quarterbacks in their first year, and we always try and draw these grandiose conclusions like, wow, he was playing so much better at the end of his first year versus beginning. I mean, yeah, and sometimes that translates into great success. Like, you know, what we saw with Carson Wentz in year two before he got hurt. He was looking really good. But, you know, then in year three when he came back, you know, not quite as good. And then, you know, you can also look and say Robert Griffin III. Man, when he was in Washington that first year,
rookie
he looked great.
Took, rookie of the year.
Took that team to the playoffs, and you're thinking, man, maybe they hit on this guy and ended up being a total bust. I don't even know. Is he still floating around the league even as a backup someplace at this point?
Well, he was with Baltimore when they had Flacco and Lamar Jackson, and I don't know if that was a one-year deal, if he's still with them or not.
And, sure. You know, you can throw Lamar Jackson into that. It's like, well, by the numbers, he was pretty good at the end of last season, but what's the confidence level he's going to be able to keep it up? But look, until you have like a 2 or 3 year sample size, I feel like, on these QBs, unless they're like a Patrick Mahomes who was, you know, the NFL MVP last year, a little bit different situation. I'm always kind of in wait-and-see mode. I feel like Derek Carr will be at least a serviceable NFL starter, you know, middle-of-the-pack type guy. Darnold, don't know for sure yet. Plus, Nick, I mean, you talk about the individual players, TJ Mensah. I mean, Antonio Brown's got at least a couple good years left on him, I think. I mean, are we convinced Le'Veon Bell is going to be the exact same player that he was after sitting out all of last season
and not
playing any football? Yeah, but I mean, we've seen guys, you know, be rested and come back and end up popping their Achilles, you know, the second day of training camp because they're not in football condition. I don't know. I am not convinced that that deal is going to end up being a good one at all for the New York Jets.
On that topic,
see.
By the way, with quarterbacks, there was a take I had that I thought I completely whiffed on, and now I'm starting to think maybe I wasn't so crazy. This is going to sound maybe crazy to some people. I am starting to think that I was maybe my original thought on Jared Goff.
That was right, after
because
all.
Watching, not just the Super Bowl, and this is not an overreaction, but every time the Rams played against a good defense that took either Todd Gurley or just the old running element out, the equation out, and Goff had to make throws, he looked really, really below average. Really below average.
Well,
I'm starting to think that with enough of those games out there and teams kind of understanding some Sean McVay tendencies and the ways to put the ball in the hands of Jared Goff for him to let me put it this way. I think his second year, we were all under the impression that Jared Goff with the ball in his hands is going to be a top 10, top 5 quarterback at some point if he wasn't already. What we learned last year is that when the ball is put in his hands against a good defense, he's maybe average at best.
He must learn. He has to learn how to read an NFL defense without Sean McVay doing it for him. That became brutally obvious in the Super Bowl when the Patriots disguised everything they were doing until after the 15 seconds were up and Goff was out there to try and do it on his own. I think he has the physical tools to be an okay player.
I think he does. But when I watched him kind of on the island all alone, when he had to make throws against teams with pressure bearing down, happy feet, inaccurate throws, and that was a lot of what you saw his rookie year. So I remember just calling myself out and saying, yeah, I was completely wrong on that one. After watching the entire body of work his third year with teams actually kind of having a beat on him and better defenses that he had to actually play, I don't know if I was so far off originally. And
five. All right, so two brothers had an idea. Let's rent a billboard, and on it, let's put our dad's phone number, his photograph, and with the sign, "Wish my dad a happy birthday."
Oh, God.
The man then received over 15,000 phone calls.
Wow.
And had to get a new phone number. Now, this was a loving gesture.
That's what keeping it real goes wrong.
But you as the father, getting all those phone calls and having to get a new phone number, are you slightly annoyed by what they did?
Oh, yeah. That, not even
slightly?
Not even slightly. I'm annoyed because the inconvenience.
So are you mad enough to ground them?
Oh, yeah. The inconvenience.
No doubt. But it was out of love?
I mean, it's out of love, but you got to learn the lesson somehow, too, and say, no, guys, that was terrible. Like, I get annoyed when I'm in a group text message and I'm doing something and my phone keeps going off and off and off because people are having a conversation that I'm not even responding to. Like, that's the most annoying thing in the world. And it's not even coming close to like 100 messages. 15,000 calls from people that I don't know. Yeah. No, I'm not happy about that, and I'm having a talking to the young ones about that.
It's not quite as bad, but to me, it's close to like putting the guy's bank account number up there and being like, "Hey, deposit some money in my dad's bank account for his birthday." Like, the heart was there, but man, with as much like junk telemarketing calls and stuff there are anymore, Nick, I get like 5 junk phone calls a week, probably at least.
I don't care if all 15,000 of those calls were, "Hey, happy birthday! You don't know me, but happy birthday." After the first 20. I'd be like, this has got to stop. Mm. This is ridiculous. So I feel like the only way to get that message through to the young ones is by having to punish them some way, shape, or form, saying, hey, I appreciate the gesture. This was wrong, and I'm going to tell you why. And because you did that, you know what?
Time to pay the price. Here
no,
we go.
At least no dessert. Maybe I don't ground them, but no dessert for sure.
All right, up next, tell you what's on tap for the rest of the evening, then send you to the Husker Courtside Show with KP and Jake Muehlheisen here on AM 590.
ESPN tomorrow.
Final segment of each and every show means it's time for What's on Tap. Look around the sports world, what you can find on the tube, or where to find it. Brought to you by Cunningham's Pub and Grill, 108th and Dodge in the Old Mill area. The reason we are doing this now and not at about 5:45 when we typically do, Nick, we have a Husker basketball pregame coming your way here in about 8 minutes or so. So, as Nebraska gets set to take on Rutgers in the opening game of the Big Ten tournament, 5:30 tip, 4:30 pregame. BTN, I believe, has the TV coverage of this one this evening.
And the other Big Ten game tonight, which will follow Nebraska and Rutgers, would be Northwestern and Illinois, also a BTN match. Of course, the winner of the Nebraska-Rutgers game will take on Maryland. And the situation is tomorrow, if Nebraska would win tonight, they would take on Maryland approximately between 1:30 and 2. They will play right after the 11:30 a.m. game. So not a definitive time, but right approximately between 1:30 and 2. So we'll have coverage for you, and then we will join you after that game if Nebraska does indeed win tonight. You've got plenty of ACC basketball going on tonight as well. A lot of the conference tournaments getting underway. Big 12 gets underway tonight. So basically any station, any college basketball game you want to take in tonight, it's going to be everywhere. So yeah. This is where really everything kind of gets in the thick of things. You did have one top 25 score earlier today, and that was in the ACC tournament. That was Miami getting ousted by 16th ranked Virginia Tech, 71-56. A little top 25 action there.
Tell us a little bit about how tough the ACC is, the fact that Virginia Tech is playing in the opening round of the ACC tournament. Man, these double bye tournaments are brutal. I mean, they are brutal for these teams that have to play the opening day. I know with the Big Ten tournament, what's the deepest a team has ever run from the opening round?
No, I can't remember.
Friday, maybe? Did somebody make it to Saturday finally, like last year, maybe?
Penn State had a pretty good run. Was it last year, the year before? I think it was it last year? I thought it was last year.
It might have been last year, I think, where they made it to the weekend.
Last year, the year before, where Penn State actually made it into the weekend. So, yeah, at some point, you just run out of gas.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it's so hard to do that. To rattle off 5 in a row starting on Wednesday. It's not easy.
Absolutely. Well, Nebraska gets their quest underway. Coming up next, we'll send you out to Chicago with KP and Jake. Nebraska takes on Rutgers for the right to advance to play Maryland tomorrow in the Big Ten tournament. Enjoy the game. Enjoy the call. Talk to you tomorrow starting at 2 on AM 590.
ESPN tomorrow.